Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, Cheeseheads, and welcome to the Cheeseman Podcast. This is Brendan, your host for the show. Joining me for a bit of World Cup filler, first up, is Franco. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, Bren. Good to see you anyway. It does feel like a while now, doesn't it? I'm not 100% into this World Cup yet, I must admit. Maybe it's going to kick in when we get to the knockout stages, but I've kind of got a passing eye on every game without really getting too excited about it.
Yeah, I've been watching more than I'd like my employer to know that I've been watching. but it's been okay, Seb. Oh, we're also joined by Seb. How you doing, Seb?
I'm good. I guess one of the advantages of having a business that is struggling is I've got plenty of time to watch loads of World Cup matches. So yeah, I've got my finger on the pulse, so to speak. So it's been a bit of an odd one so far. I'm sure we'll get into it, but some games have been really good and some games have been absolutely dire. I guess that comes from the World Cup being where it is in the calendar year.
Yeah, but it's not just that, is it? It's everything else, like the politics swirling around it every single day. It's just becoming a bit tedious now. Like, we all knew what it was going to be like. I don't know why they're making such a big deal about it every single day. But also, just there's no atmosphere, is there? There's nothing. It's a soulless World Cup, as far as I can tell, because all the other ones, you get to see the fans having a good time, taking up the local culture. And let's be honest, like, there doesn't really seem to be much to do. Like, they all just look bored. So, it's a weird World Cup, but I fully expected it to be like that.
I've been to the World Cup, obviously, here in Brazil in 2014, and it is enjoyable. They do put on a good show, FIFA, for their faults and the corruption and everything. And obviously, the questionable choice of Qatar and the bribes and everything, they do put on a good show. But then you look there, like, they pulled alcohol like the day before, was it? Or at least like 2 days before the World Cup began. And if that was going to happen, they should have made it very clear at the beginning. That's
obviously pissed off. I'm not surprised that's the one that's upset you the most, Brent.
And they won't let you barbecue outside. Yeah, it's... I don't know, that one was a surprise. But you're right, it does look shit. And 12 quid for a Budweiser. Who drinks Budweiser, first of all? So I'm focusing on the alcohol again. But who drinks Budweiser? And 12 quid, and you can only drink it in certain areas, and there's like those sobering up areas. It does look shit. It does look like a World Cup that I don't want to go to. But it's still been enjoyable. I've enjoyed it. There's a few too many 0-0 draws for my liking, but it's... it's been enjoyable. It's back
into very little hooliganism and probably very little crime as well. But it's a very safe World Cup.
Yeah. I did see the girl get her tits out on the escalator. That was quite funny. And like in Qatar as well. And there was the thing with Miss Croatia as well. Have you seen the other tweet with Miss Croatia that she's done something and she may get kicked out of Qatar or something. No,
no, Brent.
No,
you, what news sources do you read for? Is this the Daily Star again? Sport on Sunday.
Yeah, the Sunday Sport. Like, it's on Twitter, like just Lad Bible and shit. Like Miss Croatia is being done because she's, I don't know. But anyway, Seb, as you've got the finger on the pulse, as you said, what's been your game of the tournament?
Oh, the last one was pretty good. Germany, Spain. Yeah. For those who don't know, we're recording, what is it, 9:30 UK time. So just finished Germany, Spain. It was quite enjoyable to the point where my eldest and my missus sat and watched it all. Quite exciting towards the end. Obviously England, that 6-2. I don't think we can not talk about that. I thought it was very, very impressive. I'm sure we'll talk about England in a bit more depth, but obviously you then go and see Iran not roll over for Wales. That kind of puts that result into a little bit more context, I think, although Wales are possibly, barring Qatar, the worst team at the tournament, in my opinion. I hope that doesn't come back to bite me. Said it now, but really, really poor team. I think Spain look like they've got a team going on. Out of all the teams that I've watched, I know a lot of people are like now back in France because of Mbappe and stuff like that. But for me, Spain look like the most cohesive unit. Like they have a game plan. They have players that can slot in and out. They've got a lot of quality on the bench. You saw that tonight with obviously Morata coming on. They've got young kids, bring Balde on, and they've got Gavi and Pedri and all this talent coming through. I'm not 100% sold on France, and I'm not 100% sold on Brazil, which I know are probably they're the three teams, Spain, France and Brazil, that people are now starting to back. I think France have got a bit of an issue in the middle. I think if you play through, you can play through them a little bit. And Brazil, we haven't seen enough of them, but they really didn't get going for an hour. So I know you probably disagree with me there, Bren, but still very early days.
Franco, how about you? What stood out for you most at this World Cup?
I think it's been the defeats by the sort of lesser teams, isn't it? The Japan game against Germany in particular. Weren't particularly a great game, in fairness. But like I said, I've sort of only taken a passing interest. I think I've probably watched about four or five full games and then just had it on in the background all the time. It's the good thing about it being on during the day when you work at home is you can just have it on. I've missed a few of the goals, but you can kind of like jump in and out of it. I agree with Seb. Spain looked good. That 7-0 win against Costa Rica was impressive. So was ours. The fact that we've got those goals against Iran. And then they've, like Seb said, they've done quite well against Wales, shows that it was probably a decent result. But then we've just played again and looked absolutely awful. Peak Spurs, as some people were saying. France looked strong. I think that win against Australia coming from going behind was quite impressive as well. But I don't think there's been many great games, what you call great games so far. And the fact that it's taken until the sort of the last game we've watched where you've got two really genuine top quality sides in Germany and Spain, that it's taken that long to sort of say that's a really good game of football. But I think that's the state. You've seen some teams that have looked really good without sort of that quality, like Canada just getting smashed the day after they looked so good the other day. It's been a real sort of hit and miss tournament for a lot of teams. So I'd be interested to see how these final games go and who actually goes through, because there could be a few upsets as yet.
I'll tell you what really I don't like about World Cup, and it's only a personal thing. When I was a kid, and we're all around a similar age, obviously I remember Italia 90 really clearly, and even USA 94, even though England weren't there. And it was, for me, it was the players that you'd never heard of. You had no idea who they were, who they played for, who their club team were. They played for Romania or even some of the Italian players in Italia 90 and stuff like that, who are genuinely didn't know who they were. And that, this kind of burst on the scene phrase, but it's an apt phrase. But now, barring, I think, Saudi Arabia, I know every single player. There's no one that is going to surprise you or, get that big money move to a big club because they were unheard of. But I know it's only a little one, but like Dumitrescu and Popescu, as a for instance, after USA 94, and then suddenly we'd all heard of them, and then Spurs signed them, and there's just not that anymore. And I miss that, the fact that there's no kind of, there's no unknown quantity. I think that's why I did enjoy the Saudi Arabia game against Argentina, because they are probably the biggest unknown in terms of, I think the 95% of their players are playing Saudi Arabia. You don't really know any of them. But yeah, I miss that kind of unknown quantities.
But I think that's the thing, isn't it? That's more an indictment of the way that football is structured these days. All of the teams have scouting networks, and under 21 players, under 18 players are getting followed from that age, aren't they? And they'll get picked up by academies fairly quickly, most of them by Chelsea.
the lad who scored the winner for Morocco today, the goal from the free kick, was on the books of Huddersfield Town. I mean, these players are known, aren't they? Everyone knows all the players.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And they're going to go to the leagues that have got decent facilities and a bit of money if they get offered it, I suppose, rather than stay in their home countries and sort of not get paid and not have the greatest coaches working with them every day. So I think that's it. Even probably like a Division One side is probably preferable to some of the home nations. But yeah, like you said, apart from the maybe Middle Eastern teams, most of the players you do tend to know, maybe some of the Central American teams. I've known quite a lot of them. There is no mystique around it anymore. And I think one of the things as well is that tournaments like this, it's normally the big players that come out and do some spectacular things. Whilst some of the best goals so far have been scored by Saudi Arabia. Like, I know our boy Richarlison scored a decent goal, which will be a contender at the end of it. But do you know what I mean? Like, normally you're expecting some moments of magic from these top quality players. And I don't think we've necessarily seen that too much so far either.
Franco, what did you think of the result against, obviously, the Iran result? Good to see. But what did you make of Harry's performance? He got a couple of assists, but he wasn't really occupying the sort of front space that we want him to.
Well, I don't know with Harry. I think he's got so used to doing it with Spurs that he doesn't necessarily lead the line. I think you've got some other fairly intelligent players playing alongside him in that England squad. We've got a decent attacking lineup. It's just getting it right. And I don't know, the Iran game, I just felt like we had more opportunities to catch them on the counter as well. That goal that he set up for Sterling was really good as well. That was just classic Harry, wasn't it? He got the ball. He only really got himself a yard to put the ball in, but he just looked across and knew exactly where to put the ball. It was quite a nice finish by Sterling, to be fair. But I think Kane's looked good in that game. And then in the last game, I think he really struggled. But the rest of the team did. It was just really difficult to get opportunities. Like, the football just went back to what we've seen from England all the way leading up to this tournament. Just really stagnant at times and just no real attacking edge. The Yanks looked far more dynamic in midfield. And we just really struggled to create opportunities. It was just like some of the worst we've seen from Spurs this season, wasn't it? I was just watching it go, oh, I'm so bored. I didn't enjoy that last game at all. It's another one to sort of forget about fairly quickly. But, you know, we're in a fairly decent position, I guess, with 4 points in the group. It does. It means that it all goes down to the final game, which I guess, like, I don't think they're quite as bad as Seb is saying. But I suppose on the form of it, yeah, there are probably a lot of better teams in this tournament than Wales, and they've not looked good so far. So, you know, fingers crossed continues and we should get a result against them and be through the group. But I think it would be a pretty tough game. And if we turn up like we did in the last one, it'd be really hard work.
Seb, that England-USA game was a tough watch. It was peak Spurs, and there were boos at the end as well. I'm sure there was a proper
Spurs. Look, listen, you're going all the way to Qatar, you know what I mean, to watch England and follow this. Yeah, I would probably boo that.
But what do you think it is? Is it tactics? Is it Southgate just being like, I think I've read a tweet that Southgate hard boils all his eggs because he's got fear of getting salmonella. He's so cautious and just and very much safety first. Do you think that was it? Or do you think Kane's little ankle knock that he got against Iran affected his movement and that sort of seeped through the team? Or why do you think we were so poor against the US?
Okay, so I've read a couple of theories on Twitter, and I'm not necessarily putting this out as my theory, but I think there's some kind of credence behind it. Because obviously in the Euros, it's very similar in terms of, played okay against Croatia for the opening game and then got this horrible kind of 0-0 draw against Scotland, and everyone said the same thing as they did after the USA. There's a theory that I've seen that is literally just kind of holding back a little bit to see how the opposition pan out that we could face. And with Holland drawing with Ecuador in Group A, it's an unknown at the moment who will finish top of that group. But when we go into the final game against Wales, we will know if we want to finish first or second. Now, I don't necessarily believe that, but the same theory came out in the Euros after the draw with Scotland. The same theory came out when we in the World Cup when we lost to Belgium, and it was a case of actually finishing second might be a better route, as it proved, because we had an easier route through to the semi-final. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do think there wasn't any urgency to win the game. I don't think it was, you know, we weren't going for it at any point, and you were playing a team in the USA who were going for it, so it probably looked a little bit worse than it actually was. Look, it's hard to turn form on and off, but let's not forget, only one team so far has won both their games. That's France, okay? Mm. And if France got a last minute or last 5 minute goal against Denmark. And I thought they were good, France. And Mbappe, I think this is Mbappe's World Cup. Mm. But that they're the only team. You know, I know Spain have played Germany, so it's a little bit different. But Holland drew. Obviously, Argentina lost. Germany have lost and then drawn one. So it's only France that have done it. You don't want to turn it on and turn it off. But if you can rest a few players, you know, I like what he's done, Southgate, so far with the substitutes. I've not had a problem with any of the substitutes. I know they're talking about Phil Foden.
Yeah.
Foden hasn't done it in an England shirt. Now, I know you've got to give him the opportunity, but I liked Grealish coming on in both games. Obviously, he scored a goal, and I thought he was exactly what we needed against the USA. He got the ball further up the pitch, held on to it, drew some fouls, all the things that you know Jack Grealish is going to do. I think there is there might have been an argument for Foden to come on for Mason Mount, but Mount ran further. Now, look, there's more to football than running, but he was running and running and running. He was closing everything down from the front, more than Kane, more than Sterling, more than Grealish. So that's why he stayed on. I'm not sure that Foden would do that. I'm not sure Foden could have done what Jack Grealish did. I'm not sure that Foden could have done what Marcus Rashford did in helping out his wing-back. I think we might see a few changes. I'd be very surprised if Southgate goes with exactly the same starting 11 against Wales. I think we'll see the same formation. I think there'll be four at the back again. I think he'll save five at the back for a really top game against wingers where you've got to play wing backs. That's my opinion. We would have loved to have won the game and be two out of two and qualified and everything else, but it didn't really. I wasn't disconcerted by the performance against USA. That's a long answer to your question there, Bren.
Cool. Well, Franco, do you think that maybe Southgate will rest Kane? I think that this is a game where we probably can. We have to lose 4-0 to not progress. So this looks like the ideal game to rest Kane. He doesn't look at it. Even before his injury, yes, he got a couple of assists, but he, I don't know, just when you look at the other leading men, you look at Richarlison, and that he was there, that first goal that he got for Brazil, he was there. Kane's not there. I know it sounds silly to say it like this, but Kane wouldn't have been in Richarlison's position to have got that first goal, because he's not occupying, he's not running, not pressing as much. Do you think this is a chance to rest him, or do you think that Southgate will stick with him?
Well, I also think that's partly the way that Kane has adapted the way he plays, partly how he plays at Spurs, isn't it? He drops, he has runners off him, and he tries to play those balls and thread things through. The thing that worries me most about Kane is, again, I was listening to an interview with him today where he's talking about his ankle, and he said, "I've played through worse." You just think, yeah, of course you have, because you play every single game, you get crocked, you come back early, you just like, he's going to be in a wheelchair by the time he retires. So I'm not happy with him playing as much as he probably would in this tournament. And the selfish part of every Spurs fan, I think, probably hopes England don't progress or Kane doesn't have to keep playing, because he has been absolutely run ragged by Conte and by previous managers, to be fair. he just wants to play all the time. And it worries me that he's kind of playing with injuries more and more, because look, we've said it's like, it could be really important when we come back that we're in good form. And I fear that him coming back sort of half fit, maybe it'll be him getting dropped for Spurs and playing Richarlison instead, rather than getting dropped for England.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's do that. Let's look at other Spurs players that are at the World Cup. Starting today with Perisic, got a couple of assists. I don't know if you guys watched the Croatia game. I watched it earlier. It was decent. I was expecting more from Canada. I thought that having watched them against Belgium, I was like, that was one of the enjoyable games. The ones where you're like, oh, if only they had someone up front to finish and just had a bit more composure in the final third. But Croatia was superb today. I thought they had energy, which everyone was sort of questioning. Oh, they're a bit old. But Seb, I don't know if you watched it. It was a great game and two great assists for Perisic.
Yeah, Croatia were just very streetwise. Felt like they just picked Canada off. Canada have been fun. I think that, you know, there's obviously a lot of individual talent there. And technically, I think they're pretty decent. But in terms of kind of managing a game, putting a game together over 90 minutes, that's what you have to do to progress in a World Cup, let alone win it. You've got to be street smart. You've got to be savvy. You've got to know how to see games out. You've got to know how to quieten it down, when to attack, all these type of things. It's not, you can't just go for it for 90 minutes. That's what they did against Belgium. They were unlucky. I felt, you know, Belgium were poor. But I think they tried to do it today. They started at such a intensity. Obviously got the early goal, but then just picked off. You've got players like Perisic and Modric in that team. Look, yeah, they're getting on a little bit, but they're street smart. They know, you know, it's not, I don't mean that as in like winning fouls and things like that. I mean just knowing when to attack, clever balls, you know, almost make Canada look a little bit silly. You know, Canada were naive. But yeah, Croatia, I had Belgium and Croatia to struggle in this tournament simply because of the ages of their back line. And I think they'll get found out. Obviously, Belgium lost today. I think they'll get found out eventually. I don't expect them to go far, but Croatia were decent against the naive Canada today.
Yeah, but I mean, that's it. Canada had Belgium chasing shadows, didn't they? Whilst today, I just think Croatia probably watched that game and just had a bit more intelligence about the way they did. Like, so they picked them off, but it's just quality, isn't it? You see it with like the balls from Modric and the ones from Perisic. Canada just struggled when they got into those areas in both games. So I think whilst they were a very athletic, fast, dynamic side that was really sort of chasing down and all over the pitch, weren't they? I think you'd struggle to do that for a whole tournament, but also it doesn't matter if you don't take your chances and you don't have a bit of quality when you're in those opportunities to score. So I feel a bit sorry for them. They're a bit sort of like you say, they were a fun team in those games, but sadly I don't think they're quite a force yet that people like Sean Cheesehead was hoping for.
Yeah, listen, I was messaging Sean through the game. He was okay. He was like, oh, the Croatia are just a class above. And I think that was true. Whilst Canada had energy and dynamism, their manager, he's been in a pub fight. He definitely played Stone Island. Have you seen it? Like he's suffering. He voted Brexit. But this Canada team is young as well, and they've got a good future. They breezed through qualifying. Yeah. So I think it's not the last, although that's their tournament over after losing today. We'll see Canada again, I'm sure.
Well, obviously the next World Cup's in you know, partly in Canada, so I think that they'll be building for that competition. Like I said, individual talent, they've got it. You know, they've got Davis, obviously David, Larin, the lad who came on. I've forgotten his name now, but he looked really really good. So individually, they've got it. I think there's a lot of money being pumped in. Probably Sean and people over the other side of the water know a lot more about this than me, but I think there's a lot of money being pumped into the game, obviously with the World Cup, to kind of develop this young talent. So I'm sure there'll be a few more coming through as well.
And you see the interesting those comments by Vertonghen getting in a little bit of a spat with De Bruyne. Do you see that?
Yeah.
No, I've not seen that.
De Bruyne made a comment basically about how they're getting a bit old, so that's probably the reason why they don't look too sharp. And then so I think Vertonghen took a bit of offence that he's been singled out for that. So basically, when they didn't, He said, I don't know why we didn't score today. Must be because we're too old.
I saw a tweet that said something like the year's 2042 and Jan Vertonghen's just put a tackle in on... I can't think who it was. That was another... Jan Vertonghen's just put a tackle in on Luka Modric. You know, it's...
It's weird seeing the Belgian team because we haven't got any players in that team anymore. They're not with us anymore, but it still feels like there's a Spurs contingent still looking out for Moussa Dembélé somewhere in midfield there.
Yeah.
But yeah, other Spurs players, one controversial one, Christian Romero. He had his injury, which there were question marks over how serious his injury was. Was he preserving himself for the World Cup, for Messi's final World Cup, and he gets spanked by Saudi Arabia. And he was dropped for the Mexico game yesterday.
I know.
Not going too well for old Christian Romero, is it, Franco?
No, and I think for one of those goals as well, he conceded that goal, similar to how he does with a few Spurs goals as well, where he's sliding in, but he's just a little bit too late. We know what you get with Romero. Like, he's a decent defender, but he does have these moments where he just wants to run up the pitch or put in a tackle on the halfway line or something like that. And he's even done it in this World Cup. His discipline is not great. But I think we're all disappointed the fact that we didn't get to see him come back from his injury at Spurs at all. Mm. Just wasn't going to risk himself, it seemed. And then he, like you say, he just gets to play straight away. It just doesn't leave a great taste in your mouth, does it? I know Mr. Muir is very upset about it. Be interesting to see what kind of reception he gets back. I think most Spurs fans forgive our quality players. So as long as he comes back and plays well, I'm sure it will be forgiven. But yeah, it's not great. And it'd be interesting to see where Argentina go through after not looking particularly great so far in this tournament.
Yeah. He didn't help himself either with his tweet. Like the day after our final game of the season, where we just scraped through against Leeds, and he posts a picture of himself in the Argentina training gear, getting ready for the World Cup, like the day after. We're like, dude, we could have used you against Leeds. Like, if we had you against Leeds, we may not have conceded the three goals that we did. So it was, it's not good. And moving on to another Spurs player in the World Cup, Seb Højbjerg. I've not seen much of Denmark. I know they lost narrowly to France yesterday. Mm. Have you seen much of Pierre and what have you made of Denmark?
Yeah, I've seen Denmark's games because I had them as a dark horse, which is not proving to be a great prediction at the moment. But yeah, he's Højbjerg. He's actually playing a very similar role for Denmark as he does for Spurs. Often I've said this before on pods, pushes up a little bit more. I haven't seen much attacking from him from Denmark, but they've underwhelmed. Obviously, they've got a goalless draw in their first game against Tunisia. And then lost to France, as I think a lot of teams are going to do in this World Cup. And they gave it a little bit of a go, but there was nothing. They miss a proper striker, Denmark.
Yeah.
They haven't really got anyone. I think I think Dolberg started the first game, but then wasn't picked yesterday. And they've got the likes of Brathwaite and players like that trying to get the goals, and it doesn't inspire confidence. So Schmeichel pulled off a couple of really big saves as well. France could have had a few more. I'm not overly impressed with them so far.
Mm. Franco, have you seen any of the Danes?
Yeah, I watched their 0-0. I didn't see the France game. But that's the other thing as well about this World Cup, wasn't it? Like, we had 5 or 6 0-0 so far, hasn't it been?
Yeah, more than that.
And I seem to have watched them all. Yeah, they're going, oh, these are the wrong games to have chosen. Yeah, I agree. I mean, they've not looked particularly great so far, Denmark. I've you know, so much so that I didn't even really notice Højbjerg. I think it's one of those ones where I just took a passing interest. They're not going to do anything in this tournament, I don't think, for the reasons Seb's just said as well.
I'd be lucky to get through now. I think Australia will give...
Tunisia?
Yeah, we got that right. Beat Tunisia. Yeah, I think Australia will have something against Denmark. You know, Australia need a point, don't they? So you'd expect France to beat Tunisia. So Australia need a point against Denmark, and I think they could get it.
It'd be a great game, wouldn't it? Denmark against Australia trying to get a draw. It'd be fucking awful, bloody hell. Oh, one player close to our hearts as well is Sonny. Franco, did you see the masked crusader playing for Korea. I don't think he had the best go. I didn't think he had any shots on target at all in the game.
No. Again, that was another one I hardly even bothered watching, to be fair. It's one of those things where you just don't want him to be playing. Like, how is his face fixed in time? I hate it when they wear these little protective masks. Like, that's not going to protect anything. You get smacked in the face hard enough, is it? So again, Son is a player I just want to get through this tournament without any injuries. Do you know what I mean? I don't really care about how he plays in the slightest.
Yeah, I'm really hoping South Korea get knocked out. Just get him home. I have no emotional attachment or anything to South Korea apart from Son, and I couldn't give a monkeys if they. I'd prefer it if they get knocked out and get him home, get his face fixed properly. Because there's no like Franco says, that mask it won't be doing a lot.
Yeah, it was eye socket was broken in three.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Places or and the challenge in the Marseille game, it didn't look that strong. He was brushed with his shoulder.
He headbutted his shoulder pretty much, didn't he? That was
It's kind of the angle, isn't it? Because if you go in like forward on a shoulder, it's probably not as bad as if you kind of go in at an angle where you get all that body weight behind it, and then your eye sockets aren't actually that strong, are they?
No.
So yeah, can see what happened. But there's probably just a fracture, isn't it? It's not like his whole face is caved in. So that's why the face mask. But yeah, I still worry about getting into sort of they've got Ghana, haven't they, and Portugal. I don't know, these quite some physical games. So
I think one game I didn't watch was the Uruguay South Korea game, and by all accounts that was the one to miss. Yeah, that was the worst one of the lot. So apparently neither team looked had any energy. There is a thing to say. You know, I think some teams will struggle. I'm guessing if you've got you need to get this training and this energy levels, and it's not necessarily fitness. It's just obviously trying to peak at the right time on the right day as a team in a tournament where some teams have had a week's gap between games and just all trying to peak at the same time. It's going to be interesting. I think some teams will peak at the right time. Some teams might get it right for one game and not for the next. These fitness coaches and recovery scientists and all this that they have now, they'll be earning their money out in Qatar. So I think that's a massive part of it in this tournament.
There was that heartwarming little clip of Bentancur and Sonny holding hands and a little hug at the end as well. It was very mid-game as well. It wasn't even after the game. It was during the game. Come on, just have a little kiss.
No one can resist with Sonny, can they? Sonny's just, if he comes over with his arms outstretched, you just instantly, fall into line.
Yeah.
Go on. I know what you're building up for, Bren. You've gone through all these Spurs players that we've barely noticed at this World Cup. I can feel it brewing, Brendan.
Well, that's just it. This is my question now to you both. Of the Spurs players at the World Cup, which one has had the most impact?
Oh, that's such a loaded question, isn't it? Such Ben Davies. A loaded question. Yes. No, it's obviously Richarlison. I mean, he's got his goals, which is all you can ask for a striker, really. And one of them was, well, in fact, no, both of them were good goals. One of them was fantastic, though. And the fact that there was that video going around of him doing something similar in training like a few days before, he's definitely got it in the locker. I just want him to do it for Spurs. That's the thing. It's like, I can watch it for Brazil. I'm like, yeah, great, really well done. Just can get back to England and do it for Spurs, please. I think he's got a chance. Any player that's scoring two goals in a game has got a chance of golden boot. But like, you don't know. We've only seen them in one game so far. It'd be interesting to see like the second game. I might actually pay a bit more attention to that one. But I'm glad for Richarlison. And that video of his family watching the game is just, so heartwarming. I love stuff like that. All with Richarlison shirts on as well.
That's just it. He's ours. He is an icon out here. He's Brazil's number nine, and he plays for us. And he's yet to score for us in the Premier League. I get that, but he's been played out of position. He was covering for Kulusevski, which is not his natural position at all. But because he has that quality, because he has that work rate, Conte stuck with him over Lucas or Brian Hill or whoever. So.
Well, the other thing about the Brazil thing, I was reading an article, admittedly it wasn't The Guardian, but talking about the new government in Brazil, how they're sort of championing Richarlison because he embodies the spirit of what the government want to sort of show us, you know, the caring side of Brazil, where, like, you know, he donated stuff during the pandemic, didn't he? And he's given money to all sorts of different causes, the LGBT thing as well. So he's kind of like seen as a bit of an acceptable poster boy by the new government. So that's quite interesting as well. But, you know, he does seem like a decent chap at the end of the day, giving sort of oxygen bottles to Manaus when they'd run out and stuff like that, donating money for things like that. It's like the Brazilian footballers get a lot of stick, but a lot of them do some really good stuff.
The Athletic ran an article on him. It must have been short. I think it was after the Marseille game. And they'd kind of followed his career from being a 16-year-old kind of all the way through. And what kind of got me was this is a lad who takes his opportunities. Mm. He came to England as part of a Brazil under-20s, and it was his first time in the group, played some kind of tournament. And he absolutely smashed it. And obviously alerted Marco Silva, I think it was, and got a move to Watford. He went to Watford. He absolutely smashed it. You know, takes his opportunities. Plays for Brazil, you know, under 20s, under 23s, then the full team. Takes his opportunities. First game in a World Cup. Takes his opportunities. You know, I really like him. And like you say, the side that you hear as well about, you know, his nice side, his good side. That's fantastic. You can see on the pitch, everyone loves him. His teammates, I mean. So like Brent says, he's ours. I think he's cracking. And he's had injuries. He's been played out of position. When he's played, as the striker, I think he's played one game. He scored two for Spurs, I mean. He scored two goals. You know, every other time he's been played out of position. So
that is my fear for him, though, is that we are just going to keep utilising him in the wrong position. And I know, like, it's not going to happen, but I would love to see him play up with Kane behind him. Play that old 4-2-3-1, you know, with the two wingers on the side, Kane dropping deep, and then you have your two sitting midfielders. But it's just, you know, we're wedded to this three at the back now, so it's just never going to happen. But I just think that's the only way to really truly utilise him in the team. Otherwise, I don't think him and Kane up top together leading the line in any other sort of, well, in that 5-3-2, I guess it is, isn't it? I don't think that quite cuts it. So I don't know. It's a shame.
Kane, like you said earlier, Kane will just naturally drop off anyway. So even if he is playing up top with Richarlison, he'll break and he will drop deep to supply the runners.
Yeah,
so.
But then he doesn't play it with the runners then, because then we're relying on the wing backs, and you'd normally have three centre midfielders in the middle. So it's just not quite the same. Do you know what I mean? If you play that 4-2-3-1, you get an additional forward player in it.
But pretty much against Leeds at the end. That was 5-3-2 at the end. It was Kulusevski and Kane up front, pretty much. So I think it'd be interesting to see. What's going to be interesting is a fully fit Kane, a fully fit Son, a fully fit Richarlison, a fully fit Kulusevski, and seeing what we do there, see what the formation is, see who gets the game time, see if anyone actually does get a rest. It's going to be interesting, providing that we can get all four fit, which we've barely had this season.
But it was, as you were saying, Franco, as well, politically out here, like the Bolsonaro regime built itself around nationalism. So at Bolsonaro rallies, everyone would be wearing a Brazil shirt. So it's kind of like the fact that the far right in Brazil sort of seems to think that they own the Brazil shirt. That's a big thing out here right now. Because there are some people that won't wear it. Like, I'm wearing my Brazil shirt. It doesn't belong to the far right. It doesn't belong to Bolsonaro. So there's, like you were saying, with Richarlison being the poster boy, and Lucas Moura probably wasn't given the same sort of treatment by the Lula government. It's important. This World Cup, if Brazil does win it, it will go a long way to sort of unifying the country after quite a turbulent election, very, very polarized. Like, yes, Bolsonaro is this crazy right-wing nut job, but he has so much support as well among not like just regular people. Similar Trump, very similar to Trump. So it's this World Cup, if Brazil wins, that yellow jersey will unify as opposed to separate.
Whilst if we win this World Cup, nothing will change. You need more than that to unify this country at the moment and to take the heat off this government.
Going back to the play, we spoke a bit about Wales, so we don't really need to talk about Ben Davies. I saw that the second goal by Iran, when Davies was just sliding in and then he puts his head in his hands. I've seen that Ben Davies sliding in and missing it so many times. Mm. Oh, bless him.
Joe Roden's not looked bad, to be fair. Laugh, Franco. No, he genuinely hasn't. I think in the first game, particularly, I thought he stood out. But they're not a great team, Wales. Like I say, I hope it doesn't come back and bite me on the arse in terms of England. But I think for talking about another ex-Spurs player in Gareth Bale, he's done nothing. They look worse. Him and Ramsey, Ramsey's performance against Iran on Friday was one of the worst individual performances of the World Cup. He couldn't make anything work. His passes were going off. But they will never get subbed. And I felt this tournament, and I felt it a little bit at the Euros as well. It hamstrings them, if that's the right. I don't know if I got that the right way. Hamstring. It hamstrings them. but yeah, Bale and Ramsey should have both come off against Iran. Bale can't run, and Ramsey can't pass.
Ramsey was rubbish. Did you see the Frankie Ball tweet where he said that due to Ramsey's current performances, all celebrities are now immortal?
Very clever. Yeah,
he was bad.
Bale is, you know, I think I heard this right, that he's played 12 games this season before the World Cup, only two starts and 10 sub appearances. You can't go into a World Cup like that. Look, maybe he'll have a great game against England. He's capable of magic. But in terms of a full-on 90 minutes, giving it everything you've got, they've bowed down to him because of what he's done in previous things. And this was always going to be his big tournament. But he's not fit and he's not even that good. So it's a shame. It's a shame for him and it's a shame for Wales.
We're proper jinxing England, by the way, with this chat.
Yeah, Bale hat-trick.
Yeah, 100%.
Sprinting past Slabhead.
There's a couple of observations, I guess, from this World Cup. The first, the big one for me is been the injury time. It's almost like the England game was a prime example of it. I think the second round of games, they've dulled it down a bit. But we had like combined between the two halves, I think there was the injury to the goalkeeper, which affected things. But it was 25 minutes injury time combined over the two halves? Franco, what are your thoughts? I'm kind of split. I'm like, they needed to do something because the ball stays in play on an average 60 minutes. Spurs, we had this against Newcastle where it was a record. The ball was only in play for, that, I think, 51, 52 minutes of the 90 because they were running it down. Pope was taking ages with his goal kicks, etc. Subs, blah, blah, blah. So I'm kind of torn. I think they've just gone, they went a bit too far with it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a good thing. I think that there has to be something to try and reduce the level of time wasting and shithousing.
No, I'd agree. I mean, I'm trying to think what the incident was for Spurs because we had a game that was sort of overrun by about 15 minutes one time. It's probably a horrific injury or something, but I've forgotten it. But that's it. I guess when a keeper or something like that is injured, he takes ages because he was humming and hawing whether to stay on the pitch or not. And then again, then decided to come off. It all just takes a long time, doesn't it? But I don't know how I feel about it. I guess it doesn't make a huge amount of difference to the players, does it? Because if they're just stood around not doing anything... And you're right, it's more of a true representation of like 40 minutes, 45 minutes each half, which you're supposed to get. it's a bit weird that they've just done it in this tournament. And you know, they used to try and use tournaments to sort of bring in new ways of refereeing or new sort of rules and stuff like that. I do wonder whether we're going to start seeing this more in European and world football, where we get these elongated injury times. But yeah, I mean, I guess it makes it more dramatic. We've had a game with two goals in the final. What was it, the 98th and 100th minute or something, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. That you always get some drama when you've got loads of extra time.
Seb, thoughts on the crazy extra time?
I like it. I think it, and I think it makes sense. You know, there've been so many times we've sat here after Spurs games, as you said, and gone, well, hold on, both teams made five subs. And then, you know, goalkeeper went down injured, and then, you know, Southampton did their normal thing where they paused the game on 70 minutes, a player goes down for 3 minutes, and the clock goes up at the end, and it says 4 minutes. And you're like, you know, it's crazy. I like it. It does bring a little bit of jeopardy to it if the game's tight. I kind of hope it doesn't happen too much in the Premier League, otherwise I won't be able to get that last train home without missing some of the game. Yeah. But yeah, I'm all for it. I think that, you know, no doubt at some point, especially when it's knockout, there'll be a big goal. There'll be a big story and a big goal, you know, 98 minutes or something like that. And I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure when they've looked at it in decisions, it's to create stories. And we had it in the Wales Iran game, I guess. But as it gets to knockouts and things, I think it'll be more, certainly more interesting.
Yeah, I think most games I've seen over the weekend or sort of since the second rounds, the injury time's been sort of around between six and 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas the first round of games was like 10, 12, 15, sometimes. It really was. Would you be in favour of a stopwatch? So where the ref doesn't control the time, time's controlled, so the ball goes out of play, the clock stops. And it's American thing, I think. I think that American football has that thing and stuff. But
that's why American football lasts for 3.5 hours sometimes, isn't it? it's insane because you know if you literally play to that clock every time the ball goes out, you'd be amazed at how much extra time, and it will be probably 15 minutes a half. Now, I just don't think players can necessarily sustain that because they've got far too used to playing in the way they have, and the intensity that they play in some of the Premier League games as well. Doing that for an additional half an hour is a lot. Like, you see it in European games, don't you, or cup games where there used to be extra time. Players will be flagging sort of a couple of minutes into that. That anecdote Sancho said as well about extra time, just like, you know, I think it's difficult for them to keep up that intensity. And if you add that on, it's probably like an extra, you know, 30%, isn't it? They'll be playing over a season, which I just don't think is sustainable. So I'd be surprised if they do anything like that. But I do think there needs to be a bit of a compromise because there is no penalty. The refs point their watches when players are time wasting, but they don't really add that much on, do they?
Goal kicks and substitutions for me. Doesn't need to need clock. I'd like to see that. With the clock, but it doesn't need to go out. It doesn't need to stop when there's a throw-in. Referee just tell player to hurry up if he's time wasting from there. But goal kicks is one. You know, we've seen it. We've seen it in the Premier League. A minute and a half to take a goal kick. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And you are cheating, fans. I did read somewhere that after the first round of games, there was a few complaints from TV companies because they've got a gap between game one and game two and game three and game four, and suddenly, you know, what they thought they had an hour, and suddenly it's 40 minutes and. You know, can't get their coverage out and things like that. So that might be why FIFA knocked it back a little bit. But, you know, we talked about it here. There's a Newcastle game, wasn't it? 53 minutes to ball in play. You are being cheated of watching football. You know, you don't want to see the ball out of play. You want to see action. You know, games are expensive. Even watching it on the telly is expensive. So, you know, that's more action. I'm all for it.
But this is why they got rid of things like the pass back ball, you know, the pass back rule, wasn't it? Because it was just a way of just slowing the game down and not allowing the other team to do anything. And I feel like the one thing I'd really like to see, I don't want them to start, you know, elongating games by too much, but just yellow card players for time wasting. Because like you say, if you add those minutes on for the things which are part of the structure of the game and normally have to happen anyway, but if teams are purposefully taking ages over goal kicks, I just want to see an early yellow card for that goalkeeper. You know, they come to Spurs sometimes and do it within the first 20 minutes of a game. Mm. That's insane. Like, I know it's part of the game. If you're winding it down, you're leading against a team you weren't expecting to away from home, and you're in the final 10 minutes, then you're going to time waste a bit, because that just frustrates. It's a tactic. I don't mind that. But when you come into a team and you want to just basically try and time waste from the moment the game starts, early yellow cards, stop goalkeepers doing that. And players that are just wasting time, you know, purposely doing it, you can see, just have a word with them. Say one more time, yellow card. I think refs are too lenient on stuff like that. And I think that would prevent a lot of the sort of ball being out of play that we see in games.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed as well from this World Cup is the possession stats. So what they're doing now, they have like the, say, Iran, USA is the next game. So you'd have percentage of possession for Iran, percentage of possession for USA, and then in contest. So like, isn't it always in contest that like are you always competing for the ball? So, and my I was thinking, well, what happens if it's a really tough and rough game, like but where the ball is always in contest? So it's like there'll be no possession for the teams, and it would be 100% in contest. It's just a weird addition. Surely, like, one team has the ball, when they don't, the other team has the ball. The challenges will be split second.
Were they just talking about when it gets? When it gets pumped up the field, though, because I suppose that is an instance, isn't it? Because there is, you ball quite often gets pumped up. Defender wins the header, midfielder, a bit of, you know, table head tennis. So yeah, then they are competing for the ball, I guess. And then once the defender's got it or something, and he's passing it around the back, then you can arguably say that's in possession, can't you? If you're passing it around, the opposition's not getting the ball. Whilst when it's lofted up, and then, you know what I mean? I think that's what
okay,
it means.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay,
then, yeah, what I don't see is much point in that.
the other thing I've always wondered about possession stats is, and it goes back to the time wasting thing. So if you take a minute and a half over a goal kick, are you constantly in possession at that point? Yeah. You must be. So this is where I think sometimes possession stats get really skewed, because, you know, I'd much rather be trying to knock the ball about. All right, maybe you lose it for 10 seconds, then you get it back and you're trying to create something, rather than actually you're gaining possession stats because you're, you're taking a minute and a half over a goal kick. I think that sometimes as well, when I see players, I mean, Stones and Maguire did it loads against USA the other night, literally 2 yard passes to each other. And I do think to myself, are they trying to get their passing stats up? So, yeah. You know, the stat man comes and goes, feeds back to Gareth Southgate, go, it's all right, because Harry Maguire had 95% pass success, because he's playing it 2 yards to John Stones every time. So, yeah. You know, there are stats that, not necessarily don't make any sense, but they're almost a bit pointless. Depends which way you interpret them, I guess.
Well, yeah, you could have a succession of corners that get headed out by the defence, headed out for another corner. You have like 3 corners in a row. That's probably like 2.5 minutes possession, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Some of them don't make any sense.
All right, my kids are making so much noise outside. I've got to run soon. So, gents, anything else before we wrap up?
Do you still think Brazil are going to win it, Bren?
Do I think Brazil are going to win it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, and I hope they do. I really do. I'd be amazing to be here with Brazil. And as I said, the country needs a bit of unifying. So yeah, I think France probably, like I said, the only team to have won both their games. Brazil's only played one game so far, but France looking very strong. But yeah, it'd be great for Brazil. It'd be good just for the game as well. It's been 20 years since since Brazil won it last. i.e. a non-European team has won it. Mm. It has to happen. We're not going to get an African winner for a good few more World Cups, similarly with Asia. So South America is the only sort of breaking of the European monopoly of winning World Cups. So yeah, about fucking time. Brazil's going to win.
I predicted Argentina-Portugal final before it started, and I don't think that's going to happen now. And I've looked at me wall chart before we come tonight, and I've kind of tried to map it out. I've got to the last four, and I think if I told you my last four, you'd laugh at me, but I think there'll be some surprising results. Okay, so the first one is the most surprising. I've got Poland in there. If Poland win their group, so if they draw with Argentina final game, they should win their group. And then I've got them playing Australia in the second round, because I think Australia will get that second place. And then I've got them playing Holland in the quarterfinals, and I think Poland are better than Holland. So I've got Poland in the semi-finals. against Brazil. But Brazil have got Spain. If both teams top the group, Brazil have Spain in the quarterfinals. So that's going to be interesting. And then I've got Portugal on the other side. Relatively easy. I've got them playing Serbia and Croatia in the quarterfinals. I think Croatia will beat Germany. That's what I've gone for. And then, yeah, I've put England in, but I'm not really sure. I've got them beating France in the quarterfinals, but I'm not too sure about that. So, yeah, Poland, Brazil, England and Portugal. That's what my last four look like. You heard it here first, folks.
Ain't going to happen, yeah.
Never going to happen.
So I haven't checked the Facebook page. Football Prizes, is there anything out this week?
It's Harry Kane, but it's sold out. It's gone. It went very, very quickly. Nice kind of old school purple shirt. There are, however, plenty of other prizes on footballprizes.co.uk, including, they do things now, spin to win, where you can win kind of like, it's like a Wheel of Fortune type thing where you can win multitude of prizes. They've also got something called the drop, very similar, where you kind of, you're in, if you win that, you watch your ball go down the slot, can I say that? And and win lots of prizes. I'm looking now, they've got Adidas trainers, champagne, Tyson Fury stuff, anything and everything on there. Go head over to footballprizes.co.uk and use our exclusive code CHEESE10. That's all letters CHEESE10 for 10% off your purchases.
Yeah, and if you get there now, you'll probably beat Steve Diver to the rest of the prizes because he seems to be winning everything.
He has won a lot over the last few weeks, much to callers' annoyance.
Oh, right, Cheeseheads. Speaking of caller, do keep an eye out for the YouTubes. They've been going thick and fast through the World Cup. Gibbo's been hosting, I think caller was back for the last one. So do check out the YouTube channel for all your YouTube needs. And we will be back. I will do another one probably after the quarters, I reckon, just to check back in. And it'll be just good to chat with you guys and chat World Cup. And so, yeah, do listen out for that as well. And please, obviously, subscribe and follow us on our social media platforms. Franco, thanks for joining.
No worries, Bryn. Yeah, like I said, hopefully I start to get a bit more into this World Cup so we can actually do a bit more well-informed pod and it's not just Seb who's sitting there drinking his tea and eating biscuits all day, watching the football, doing the hard work.
Very hard work.
Thanks for joining, Seb.
No worries. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, I hope my work gets a bit busy and next time the roles are reversed. I'm sat there going, I hope Bale doesn't score a hat trick and I hope Poland don't get knocked out because those would make me look really stupid.
And that's what matters. I'm just hoping Brazil get a good result tomorrow. Richarlison carries on his amazing form. And yeah, we will have a Spurs winner of the World Cup. Might be Hugo, might be Richarlison, might be Harry Kane, who knows? But it's good to watch us and to not sort of be panicky as well. Like it's good just to not be watching Spurs all the time and just enjoying what the football is.
It's a great brand.
That's the quote, Franco, you need on the strap line on Facebook, everything. It's good not to watch Spurs all the time.
And on that note, come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs. Sports Social Podcast Network.